Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
You do what's required and asked of you to represent our university.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
We're all in to finish what we've started.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Three great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
And welcome to the second hour of Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo, news and sports director of the Louisiana Radio Network, along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and Andre Champagne, our producer tonight. Final show of the 2025 season, and we have one more hour to go. And we have a great guest here to lead off hour number two. That is Nick Bromberg, senior writer for Yahoo Sports. Nick, happy new year. Thanks a lot for joining us on Tiger Rag Radio. How you doing tonight?
Hey, great. Happy New Year to all. Thanks. It feels like the season flew by this year, even though we still got, you know, three rounds of the college football playoff to go.
Well, the real season for LSU begins on Friday, and that's why we got you on, Nick, because give us your thoughts on how this is going to look on Friday, because this is my feeling, and maybe you could tell me if I'm wrong here, but when the portal window opens, and I don't know if it's at 12:01 a.m. on Friday, or I don't know if there's an exact time on Friday, January 2nd, but I have a feeling this is going to look a lot like NFL free agency and NBA free agency, where a lot of guys right off the bat get into the portal and immediately commit somewhere. Is that what you're anticipating, Nick? Because I feel like there's been a lot of agent discussion with football programs, and a lot of these decisions have already been made.
You know, that was the comp I was going to use myself. It does feel like we're going to be in that, what is it called in the NFL, the legal tampering period? Obviously, in college sports at this point, we don't even know what's legal and it is and isn't legal coming to tampering. But you're right, especially with all the quarterbacks. I mean, that felt like going back to basically the end of the regular season, as soon as season was over, quarterback after quarterback expected to enter the portal, You know, a guy like Trinidad Chambliss, for example, it depends on if his season ends on Thursday night, and also with the waiver going forward, he's going to probably have to be in limbo a little bit. But, you know, for guys like Dylan Raiola, Rocco Beck, you know, you can go down the list of quarterbacks, I think we're going to know pretty early over the weekend where they're headed and going to play in 2026.
Hey, Nick, this is Todd. Can you, for me, sort of continue that characterization? You were kind of going down that path. You know, this is the fifth full year of the transfer portal as we know it, but there have been some changes in it this year that are going to impact that timeline and that frenzy. But, and I realize this is kind of complicated, but can you go back to 2021, say when Brian Kelly was just hired at LSU, and the different changes that have occurred in the transfer portal over those 5 years?
Yeah, you know, the big thing right now, you know, let's just say Lane Kiffin to Brian Kelly. The biggest contrast here is that Lane Kiffin is not going to have a spring to evaluate his roster and then say, I need to reload at this position, this position, this position, and then go get guys who have said, maybe I'm not going to find the playing time I want at their schools after spring practice. You know, now we've got – Lane Kiffin's got 2 weeks. Coaches around the country have 2 weeks to say, this is what I'm going to do for my roster in 2026, and I can't make any changes, which is why players have been so proactive in December and saying, I'm going to transfer because I need to get signed right away. And so that, to me, is the most fascinating part, is it's how quickly are coaches going to work, especially with the signing period still to come for those few players who didn't sign out of high school in the early signing period is you've really got to remake your roster here in this 2 weeks, because you're not going to have that second opportunity that coaches and players had for the previous 4 years after spring practice. So to me, you know, we're going to look at this frenzy over the next 48, 72 hours, but then how many players are potentially going to say, okay, look, my coach, my team, they went out and signed two or three guys at my position. I'm going to jump into the portal late in the transfer window, because you still can sign after the portal window closes as long as you're in the portal. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be an absolutely fascinating dynamic now that, you know, for lack of a better term, the transfer calendar has been streamlined. But we don't know how this is all going to work, because we've been living in a world where players have had two opportunities to transfer.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. I feel like I'm flip-flopping around here, and I apologize for that. But, you know, like you pointed out, in the past, there was very little tampering, so to speak. If there was tampering, it was on the down low. Right now it seems to be, like you said, just out there in the world, and everybody's talking about it, you know. But they technically, they're not supposed to be talking to their agents aren't supposed to be talking to other teams until January 2nd when it opens.
Exactly. You know, we're living in a world, and, you know, it's more right now of an issue in basketball. Obviously, the big hot button issue right now is James Nagy signs with Baylor after he was drafted 3 years ago, I believe, in the NBA draft, has been playing overseas, and now he's going to be a midseason signee for Baylor. I know that's not an apples-to-apples comparison for football, because you really can't take what's happening in basketball and other sports and put it into football, just given the way that football operates. But I do think it's a symbol, especially with what the NCAA said Monday night, basically saying, you know, we need Congress to act here. And it really does feel like that the NCAA is, I don't know if paralyzed is the right term, mm-hmm. but they really need Congress. They really want Congress to do anything. And now, you know, we can argue in circles for days about whether federal intervention in college sports is a good idea or not. And I think there's a lot of ways we can go about it, how it could be done, and is it actually going to be a priority for Congress in 2026? I'm not totally sure. We've had, I don't know how many bills we've talked about over the last 2 years that simply have not come to fruition or have not made it past committee. So until we actually have something solid in Congress, the NCAA isn't going to get close to that antitrust legislation that it wants. And until that happens, I don't necessarily see an NCAA willing to step up and actually enforce the rules that are on the books or even make new rules regarding the transfer portal. And so it feels like they let the horse out of the barn when the portal started in 2021. And things, I think, have kind of, I don't want to say have gotten worse, but they have blossomed from there. And I think that mushrooming is going to continue for as long as it takes until Congress acts, because the NCAA does not seem like it wants to do it on its own.
As a consequence of that, Nick, do you believe, like LSU right now, you know, the portal for these guys doesn't open until January 2nd. They can't declare, but they've all, there's six offensive linemen for LSU, who, you know, it was a horrible offensive line this year, and they had no running game, very little pass protection. They scored horribly in terms of their grades. But yet they're all declaring that they're going to enter the portal. Could a lot of that just be, hey, you know, I just want to see what I'm worth?
Exactly. You want to see what you're worth. And you also, too, you know, you look at the SEC scholarship the adjustments going from 85 to 105. And Steve Sarkisian, I think, gave a very good answer today about how that impacts everything, is that there's still only so much money you can draw from. Sure, it's great now that SEC schools can have 20 more scholarships, but then where's the money coming from to pay those players who are on the scholarships? And if you want an 87th player, an 88th player, a guy who's going to be a depth piece, how much can you give him, and are you giving him money that would come at the cost of potentially paying a higher-end offensive lineman, in LSU's case, if you need that, or a position player at another school? So, you know, playing this balance is going to be very difficult for coaches, I think, over the next – especially now that there's only 2 weeks that they have to do this. And then also, too, you know, for a player, you can say, hey, look, I want to see what I'm worth on the open market, because as we've seen – even before the portal is opened and players who are now staying at their schools, it's now not, I am not entering the portal and I'm staying at school XYZ for my junior or senior year. It is the player has re-signed with the school mm-hmm. for 2026. I think that is still language for me. I've been operating in this business for a long time. I'm still having to wrap my head around the use of the word re-signed when it comes to college football players.
So with these are more than nuances. These are substantial changes in the mentality and the approach towards the transfer portal because of the lack of legislation, like you pointed out earlier. How does that bode for Lane Kiffin, who is expected, you know, he's the portal king. He's got that reputation from building programs year in and year out at Ole Miss, primarily through the transfer portal. He comes to LSU. He does not have 2, 3, even 4 years to build a program. He's got to make a transition right away, and yet he's faced with all these nuances. Can he and his staff already have their roster but pretty much carved out, know who they want, where they want to go, and start to wrap this up in the first couple of days of the transfer portal? Or is this going to likely draw out through January and into February for LSU?
I think it has to be a drawn-out process for LSU because, I mean, I think Lane Kiffin has been the absolute one of the best, if not the best, coach when it comes to adapting to the new world of college football and what they were able to do with the support of the collective they had at Ole Miss to get the transfers that they had to power that team into the college football playoff. But, you know, it is a huge task, especially when you have an offensive staff that is still currently coaching at Ole Miss and preparing for a playoff game, to identify every single player on your roster and know that this is what we need to do right away. Obviously, you have your priorities. You want to keep your top recruits, your high school recruits. You want to keep that recruiting class intact. You know where you want to go in the portal. But I do think it is going to be the drawn-out process where, you know, Trinidad Chambliss said today, you know, he has not talked to Lane, and he doesn't think it's even allowed at this point. But for a guy like him where he's going to be waiting on a sixth year, and going back to the lack of rules for the NCAA, I'm not going to be surprised if and when he gets that sixth year of eligibility, because if Diego Pavi can get it for being JUCO, I'm not necessarily sure there's not going to be the loophole there from going from Division II mm-hmm. to Division I to get the same treatment for Chambliss. So then Chambliss is going to have a decision of, do I follow Lane Kiffin to LSU and can be that bridge quarterback for the Tigers in 2026, or do I stick it around in Oxford? And then if Chambliss gets the extra year and he sticks around in Oxford, then Austin Simmons has a decision to make. It just feels there's going to be a lot of dominoes here, and I just don't necessarily know how soon that Chambliss' situation is going to be resolved.
Well, since we're talking about Chambliss and we're talking about the LSU quarterback situation, right now LSU, as we speak, has one scholarship quarterback on its roster, and that, of course, is Michael Van Buren, who – started the last 5 games of the year, including the bowl game, but he didn't really do anything to distinguish himself as a potential starter. Now, he has had conversations with Kiffin and his staff, supposedly. But is it realistic for LSU to be able to go into this portal and bring in 2 or 3 different quarterbacks?
I think so, because, you know, you look at Lane Kiffin did the same thing at Ole Miss. You know, we look at the name is escaping me at the moment, but everybody's going to know who I'm talking about. He started at Oklahoma State for 2 or 3 years, signed for his final season of eligibility at Ole Miss, and spent it as a backup. Lane Kiffin has signed multiple quarterbacks in the portal, and I think he has to, because can you view Van Buren as your floor guy and say, look, we want to keep you on the roster, we want to keep you around, but we're also going to look for other options? And for a guy like Van Buren, is that an appealing option to say that, you know, maybe I'm going to end up being the second or third guy on the roster when it all is said and done? So, yes, I do totally expect LSU to add multiple quarterbacks. It's just a matter of, do we have a clear-cut number one choice, or are we going to try to bring in guys of similar talent levels and have an actual legitimate competition going into the 2026 season?
Hey, Nick. Thank you for that. We're going to keep Nick through the break here, and we'll have more transfer portal discussion when we come back inside the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. Stay with us.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit LAFarmBureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
We're back here on Tiger Rag Radio inside the Super Chevy Dealer Studio as we bring back Yahoo Sports College Football senior writer Nick Bromberg. There were 4,400 in the portal last year with two portal windows. How many players do you expect in this window, Nick, with just the January period, now that that's changed?
I think we're probably going to end up looking at about the same number. Very well could be more than that. But right now, you know, given the fact that players only have one opportunity, we're probably going to, I would say, the number is going to end up being about 4,000 to 4,500. And then I think the fascinating thing to me is how many players enter the portal and then end up staying at their own schools, or how many have to end up transferring down a level. Because I do think there are going to be guys who enter the portal thinking that they have better prospects somewhere else, and those opportunities don't dry up, or do dry up, and then they have to look for some place to play, whether it's going from a Power 5 school to a lower Group of 5 school, or even all the way down to maybe the FCS level.
So, Nick, from the LSU perspective, have you had a chance to, I mean, they're basically rebuilding their entire roster, but are there specific position groups that you're hearing about LSU needing, or that they could be attracting certain types of players, position group players, you know, like quarterback we talked about, offensive line we kind of touched on, anything else, or are those the two most prominent ones?
Those, I think, are the two of the bigger ones. What I'm fascinated by is Lane Kiffin has had a fantastic track record of bringing transfer wide receivers in at Ole Miss, and I do not – I mean, I anticipate that continuing at LSU. I do think he's going to snag one of the best wide receivers out there, if not a multiple of them, because of what we've seen at LSU and how receiver-friendly his offensive system is. He's a – you know, we've Trey Harris in the NFL. He produces NFL players at wide receiver. And I also do think that – you know, we saw what the quickest path to legitimate contention was for LSU over the last few seasons, for Ole Miss the last few seasons with Lane Kiffin, and that was loading up transfers on the defensive front. I think the Tigers should be very active in that space, because just look at not only what Kiffin did at Ole Miss, but also look at what Texas Tech has done. Texas Tech is now a legitimate national championship threat, going from one of the worst defenses in college football last year to one of the absolute best by simply spending that money that they had from Cody Campbell and others on the defensive line and creating one of the most dominant defensive lines in college football.
Nick, a few weeks ago we had LSU Athletic Director Virg Ausberry on the show, and he talked about the importance of bringing kids in through the transfer portal that not only are obviously good players that can fill in specific holes that you need, but also bringing in players from winning programs that have that winning mentality. Have you noticed anything about Kiffin's ability to do that in the past?
You know, yeah, he can find, and he's also found, you know, a group of five players who have played at winning programs. You come in and they've turned Ole Miss into a title contender. I do think that is an absolute thing you have to look for, is you don't necessarily want a player who's maybe a star on a bad program. If you can find a good player who was on a very good program and then turn him into a great player at a great program, that is how you build a championship contender. And as you know, you look at LSU, there's going to be plenty of players out there, and with the money that LSU is going to have to spend, I necessarily don't know if LSU is going to be the goal is obviously the college football playoff in year one. Is that a little too unrealistic? I'm not totally sure, but I think 2027 and beyond, you absolutely have to think SEC title contention and college football playoff contention on a regular basis.
So you mentioned money, and obviously one of the reasons that Lane Kiffin said that he was really attracted to LSU was not just because of the fertile recruiting base, but also because of the commitment that the LSU program and the boosters have to this roster, guaranteeing him $25 to $30 million every season to build this roster. Obviously, a lot of that translates to the transfer portal, especially this year for LSU. They're even talking about LSU may have more than that because the enthusiasm has been so rampant among the boosters here at LSU that they think they have – are they reportedly have more than $30 million, upwards to $35 million. How competitive is that in today's environment?
It's super competitive, and I still think, you know, we have to sit there and take those numbers with a grain of salt and say maybe they're actually going to be a little bit more on the back end because, you know, we talk about everything, that the roster caps, you have the salary caps, some of the revenue caps, but all the talk about teams are exceeding that because, again, as we went back in the last segment of the NCAA's lack of enforcement, lack of ability to enforce the rules, I think we're simply looking at a situation here where if a team that has all the resources like LSU, like a Texas, like any other SEC program in the top dollar Big Ten program, they are going to be able to continue to spend. And even though we're in this revenue sharing era, that the gap, I do think, is going to still grow between those really financially resourceful teams and those that don't necessarily have that money.
Hey, thanks, Nick, for joining us today. When we come back, we'll have LSU Radio women's basketball play-by-play commentator Patrick Wright to talk a little women's hoops from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. This is Tiger Rag Radio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
Tiger Rag Radio is back, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
We're back here on Tiger Rag Radio. Great stuff there from Nick Bromberg from Yahoo Sports, who joined us early on in this hour. And again, for those that are just joining us, if you want to catch any of our shows, you can listen along at anywhere you get your podcasts. We put the show in a podcast form. Also, it's available on YouTube as well. Jeff Palermo, along with Todd Horn and Andre Champagne, who covers LSU women's basketball for TigerRag.com. Joining us now, we're inside the Super Chevy Dealer Studio, and joining us now, it's the voice of the Lady Tigers, Patrick Wright, fifth-ranked LSU women's basketball team, opening up SEC play against 11th-ranked Kentucky on New Year's night, 7 o'clock, LSU 14-0. They've scored 100 points or more in 11 of their games. Most of their games have been blowouts. Patrick Wright, you've had to have a lot of filler material by your side during these broadcasts to fill out the entire 40 minutes.
Yeah, but it's time time to see what it looks like for real, and we get a pretty good test coming in here in Kentucky on Thursday night.
Patrick, you've been covering this team for years. You've got tons of experience and probably extra added insight into Coach Mulkey and the staff. This is arguably her most talented team ever. you know, you could say 2023 obviously is right up there, but now, like you said, it's about to get really serious in the next 18 days, starting January 1st. They play number 12 Kentucky, then number 11 Vanderbilt, then Georgia, number 2 Texas, and then Oklahoma on the 18th. That's a gauntlet like maybe you've never even seen.
No, and this league is so much better than it was when Coach Mulkey started. You know, that first year when we finished right at the top of the league, only really behind South Carolina, there weren't a whole lot of outstanding teams besides South Carolina, Tennessee, and then LSU. Of course, Texas wasn't in the league yet. Oklahoma wasn't in the league yet. And a lot of teams that are really good right now weren't very good then. So this will be by far and away the biggest run of gauntlet is the good word, just because the league is so good from top to bottom, plus the addition of Texas and Oklahoma. But I don't think it is arguable. This is her most talented team, just from 1 to 11. Yeah, Angel Reese is probably the best player, but there's just no drop off on her bench. The only thing that's a little concerning right now is some of these kids are young. You know, how will they react in their, you know, when they go through league play? I thought the game at Duke was a good test. For example, Zakiya Johnson got off to just a really rough start, only played 4 minutes. We never saw her again in that game, and she's played well since. But Grace Knox on the road at Duke got off to a great start and was very good for LSU. So the question will be that the young kids, will they need a little time to kind of figure it out, or will they just acclimate themselves very quickly? And again, the first step to answering that comes on Thursday night with a very good Kentucky team that is a old team. Lots of seniors, a lot of them are transfers, but a lot of college basketball has been played by their team. So that's a little bit of an advantage to Kentucky there, I think.
With all the freshmen stepping up and really seemingly up to this point maturing as fastly as they have or as fast as they have, Kim has resorted to this mass substitution, you know, starting five, which she switched up a little bit, but then immediately substituting five in and then interchanging them throughout the course of the rest of the game, but sort of sticking to that first few minutes of each quarter with one lineup, then switching to a whole nother lineup, you know, halfway through that quarter. Do you think that'll continue in SEC play, or was that just her figuring things out?
No, I think that's probably pretty much done at this point with the game set to be much more competitive. I think you'll start to see a normal rotation pattern. I mean, I think you're going to get full Wiley into the game pretty quickly, you know, regardless of who she will come in for. And I think now you'll kind of see it that she'll coach more by feel. You know, if she sees somebody struggling, she'll bring them out. If somebody's on a hot streak, she'll leave them in. So I think, you know, unless – and again, I, as you look up and down the schedule, it's hard to find any teams that you figure LSU is going to be, you know, a 30, 40, 50-point winner against in this league. Everybody's pretty good. So I think unless she's particularly unhappy with an entire group, I think we're just going to see normal substitution patterns from here on out.
Do you think this team is going to be able to maintain its ability to shoot the ball the way it has? It's been a great outside shooting team. It's been a great inside shooting team. The post has been phenomenal early on.
I think it's going to be a little more difficult. The Kentucky team that's coming here, they have not played a super tough schedule either. However, they're holding their opponents to 50 points a game. Their only opponents are only shooting 31%, and they're only 27% on threes. LSU's last couple of games, we have not shot well from the three. But this offense is good enough that, and you now have that inside-outside game that, you know, since you've got a true face-up post in Koval, and you've got some other posts who can do a lot of different things, I don't think LSU's going to have difficulty finding good shots. It might be a little harder now, but I don't see anybody able to slow this offense down and hold them to, you know, 60, 65 points in a game. I think the shots are going to be there. tomorrow they've got a 6'5 center in Clara. On Thursday in Clara Strack, who's blocked 43 shots. So that's going to be something you got to deal with. And there's going to be those spread out through the conference season. We haven't really seen players like that, so it's going to be tougher. I don't expect LSU to shoot 55% in league play, but can they be in the upper 40s? I definitely think so, and that'll put them toward the top of the league.
Are you concerned about the fact that throughout this 14-0 start, they've faced very little adversity and how they are going to respond? Because there will be adversity.
Not really. I think the Duke game, even though it was just one game, I thought was a great test to that. You know, we got punched in the mouth very quickly, and there was no sense of panic. No, everybody, you know, Full Wiley came in, changed the game, and everything worked out fine. I think there's enough, even though there's some young players on this team, you got enough veterans like Flaje Johnson and Michaela Williams, and Full Wiley herself, even though it's her first year here, she's played a lot of ball also. I think you've got a calming influence that if things are going rough, you got enough players who can just settle them down and say, look, we got this. We'll take care of it.
Hey, Patrick, this is Andre. You've been able to see Jada Richard kind of grow from that first-year point guard to now. What kind of strides have you seen her make as far as facilitating this offense?
Well, and especially because Kim puts so much emphasis on having a good point guard and making the right plays.
Yeah, it's hard to quantify. If you look at the stats, like, well, she's not scoring a ton of points. She's not necessarily getting a ton of assists. But what she is doing is she is getting the ball into the front court, getting people where they need to be, and then she's getting the ball to, you know, say to Michaela or to Flaje, who then kind of create. It's mainly about her not turning the ball over as well. She has been very good at keeping track of the ball. That was a little bit of an issue as a freshman. And then she is also, I think, doing a good job. She does. You're not going to need her, I don't think, to score a ton of points. But if you can get 6, 8, 10 points out of her on a night, she's doing a better job of picking her shots right now, and Coach loves that.
Patrick, should be fun. It all gets started Thursday, New Year's Day night against 11th-ranked Kentucky, and then LSU will be on the road to take on 12th-ranked Vanderbilt on Sunday. Happy New Year, my friend. We'll be chatting a lot in 2026.
All right, same to you guys. Thanks a lot.
Voice of the Lady Tigers, Patrick Wright. We'll have Michael Bonnet, LSU Sports Information Director. He'll join us in the next segment as this is Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Tiger Rag Radio is back on the air, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Hey, we're back here on Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo, along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and Andre Champagne. It's now time to bring in the longtime sports information director for LSU. That is Michael Bonnet. And Michael, thanks a lot for spending some time with us. Happy New Year. How you doing?
Good, good. Sorry I missed my earlier slot. I got my times mixed up. My apologies.
That's okay. A lot going on with LSU. Obviously, with a new football coach, and you got the winter sports really rocking and rolling, and conference play set to begin for men's and women's basketball. But I know you've only had a chance to work with Lane Kiffin for a few weeks now, but what's it like working with the Lane train, and when do you get access to all his social media channels, you know, and so that you can start going crazy on there?
Yeah, so, you know, it's been great. You know, I haven't spent a lot of time with him, but the time I have spent with him has been good. You know, I'm looking forward to this next chapter, and he's obviously going to bring a lot of excitement and offense. I think everyone is excited about what we could potentially do on the offensive side of the ball, combined with what Blake Baker's done defensively. It could be a really special beginning of something very special here. So I know that our fans are excited. We've had really the number of ticket requests have been through the roof, and it's been unlike anything we've seen in a long, long time.
Michael, hey, you know, you and I go way, way back. We went to back when we were both students at LSU and working in various forms of media at LSU. And, you know, in the last 25 years, you started with Nick Saban. You then had Les Miles, then Ed Ogeron, Brian Kelly for 4 years. now Lane Kiffin, and I know you hadn't had a lot of time with Lane Kiffin, but what are the differences between those two coaches, those five coaches, that stand out the most for you right now at this early stage with Lane?
Todd, you cut out right there at the end of your question when you asked me, right before you said something about the five coaches, what stands out?
Yeah, the differences between the five coaches. I know it's early with Lane, but just demonstrative differences.
Yeah, you know, Nick was so Nick, you know, that was my first coach in the job for the first time. So, you know, everything was so new, and Nick was new. Obviously to LSU, and you know, he was and so I was just learning my job and dealing with Nick, and you know, he taught me a lot. You know, he obviously had his way of doing things. He was obviously very successful, and he taught me a lot. He taught me you know, how to run my office. Not that he told me what to do, but I watched him run his football staff and his program, and it helped me be better at what I did. You know, Les took over and did a great job. And, you know, he had huge shoes to fill with coming in after Nick. And Les was, you know, he said a lot of crazy things, some goofy things, but I enjoyed my time with him. He obviously had great success and, you know, won a lot of football games, won a national title and played for another one. And, you know, who can deny what Ed did in 2019?
Right.
You know, he took over for Les and during the 2016 season, and really took a team that was could have gone either way, and really galvanized that team and did a great job at the stretch, and ended up getting the job on a full-time basis. And then, you know, 2 years later, we have arguably the greatest season in college football history. So, and then BK, you know, I don't think BK was very understood very well here. You know, that people say he didn't fit in. I had a great relationship with Coach Kelly. You know, he treated me with great respect, and we got along fine. It took a little while to get to know him. You know, the transition is difficult, especially when you have an interim coach, as we did when Coach Kelly came in with Brad Davis. And then we had the same thing with Frank and with Lane. So, you know, now that the 2025 season's over and we turn our attention to the transfer portal here on Friday and the next, you know, couple weeks, it's going to be obviously very exciting. I'll get to spend a lot more time with Lane. But, you know, I've watched him from afar, and I think Jeff had mentioned something about his social media. He's a great follower on social media. You know, he's fun. He's entertaining. He's funny, philosophical. He, you know, it's really, I've enjoyed following him on Twitter and Instagram. So, yeah, I mean, every one of them is different, and the circumstances about how they got here were different. You know, I'm just lucky to be along for the ride, and, you know, I'm going to enjoy this. I thought Coach Kelly, you know, when he signed that contract, who would have thought that it would have been 4 years? I thought that potentially, you know, he would have ended up being the last coach I work with, but that's not the case. And so we're all on board the Lane train, and we're very excited about it.
Michael, were you shocked by the how quickly things turned for Brian there starting October 26th and then through the next week? And have you ever been through a time period like that in your tenure here?
Well, no. I mean, we've been through a lot here, so nothing surprises me in college athletics anymore. But I think we all had a sense when that A&M game turned the way it did and their fans took over Tiger Stadium. It was, you just had a feeling something was, you know, about to happen. I don't know what that was, but something was going to happen.
Michael, could you hold on through the break here? I'd like to take you to the end of the show here at 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
if you just had a few more minutes. Okay. All right. We're talking with Sports Information Director for the LSU Athletic Program, Michael Bonnet. Just a few more minutes with him as we wrap up the 2025 year of Tiger Rag Radio when we come back from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio, we're back to Tiger Rag Radio.
Just a few more minutes left to go in this show, and we got Sports Information Director Michael Bonnet on the air with us. And, Michael, one of the themes of Lane Kiffin, and we were talking about him on social media, he uses the hashtag just different, describing LSU. LSU, it seems, and maybe because we're all here in this LSU bubble, but it seems to me that no one has done a better job, no athletic program, and I'm not just saying this because you're on the airways with us, but I really do believe this, has done a better job in marketing its athletic program here. The term, the brand is used a lot for LSU. And granted, I think in this time of when NIL really first got going and players were able to really market themselves, you had two outstanding student athletes that can lead that charge in Livy Dunn and Angel Reese. And I think even to a sense, Joe Burrow before that in 2019, I mean, there was so much interest around him. But give us an idea, and I know we only have a couple minutes here, but how LSU has been able to take that, what was started with people like Livy and even Flaje Johnson and Angel and Joe, and really have used it for all of the sports programs at LSU.
Yeah, you know, it starts with having a great staff. But before that, though, you got to have great student athletes who garner national attention. We've been very fortunate to have some of the most popular student athletes nationally that helped us, and they came, as you mentioned, they came along at just the right time. So we took advantage of that, and you got to have a great staff, and it starts at the top with Zach Greenwell, who's our deputy AD for external affairs. And you know, he came in, he's been here almost a couple of years now, and it's a concerted effort to you know, make the LSU brand the best in college sports. And, you know, when you win a national title in 2019, gymnastics wins, baseball wins, women's basketball wins, there are not many schools that can claim that. And so you're able to leverage that success and across these social media platforms. And you know, the reality is social media is where everyone gets their news now for the most part. And Brandon Berrio, who oversees our social efforts for football and then the rest of our sports, does a great job with that. And, yeah, we've been very fortunate to have some really good teams along with just some outstanding student athletes, high character, and entertaining. Flaje, you know, I mean, we've been very lucky. So, you know, we have tons of literally millions of followers, and we're able to leverage that from sport to sport. So that's beneficial to us. But, you know, it's a concerted effort. We want to be the best, obviously, on the field, but we want to also be the best when it comes to marketing and branding our sports, our student athletes, our coaches. And our crew's done a great job of doing that.
Michael, you know, when you talk about all the great players, we kind of left Jaden Daniels out of that mix, and he kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, and he had one of the most phenomenal years in the history of college football. How do you adjust to that as it's happening?
Well, you know, so yes, it was a you know, Jaden was at Arizona State, he really was not, he was a sought-after quarterback, but, you know, he really emerged in his 2 years under Denbrock and Sloan here. And you just ride that wave. Unfortunately, our defense wasn't in place, so we really could have done something special with him at quarterback. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Jaden was great, and to win a Heisman and be the number two overall draft pick, that's something we continue to promote and publicize because it helps the program in so many ways.
Yeah, got to get him healthy next season, that's for sure. Yeah. Hey, Michael, thanks a lot. Happy New Year. Should be a lot of fun with the Lane Train. We'll talk again soon.
All right, thank you, guys. Happy New Year.
All right, that does it for the 2025 Tiger Rag Radio. We'll be back, and it'll be even better in 2026. For Andre Todd, I'm and Glenn, and I'm Jeff Palermo. Thanks again for listening, and from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio, have a great night and a happy new year.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at TigerRag.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine. Or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.